I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mother's Day is right around the corner, and in true She Pivots fashion, we're highlighting moms who've dedicated their lives and their pivots to supporting mothers. The iconic Christy Turlington will join us to talk about launching Every Mother Counts after pivoting from her 90s supermodel days. And later, the co-CEOs of Baby to Baby will share how they're addressing the needs for millions of babies and moms. So tune in and subscribe to She Pivots. New episodes out every Wednesday. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Real people,
real celebrities,
real talk.
Join the Breakfast Club.
Blast off in your
weekday
head.
Morning, 6 to 10.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are the Breakfast Club. We got a guest with us this morning.
And you know what's so crazy, man? We be having rappers in here, right, who act so hardcore
gangsta
and act like they done did so much and haven't done nothing. They probably think you're a chef or something.
Yeah.
But you put in that work.
Lilo Brancato Jr. Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you.
Good morning, sir. You got talking to the mic. We know you from Sopranos.
Right.
Bronx Tale in particular, though, one of my favorite movies.
Bronx Tale.
How do you say Calogero?
Calogero.
Calogero.
Yeah.
What was your role in Sopranos?
I played Matthew Bevilacqua. Mm-hmm. I was a stockbroker, low-level guy, trying to get in with, you know, Tony and those guys. And, you know, ultimately, you know, I was killed on the show.
Yeah.
You really talk like that.
Yeah.
I didn't know if that was just a voice for the show or what.
I'm going to ask you to spit out your gum, though.
Cause yeah.
Hear that on the mic.
Okay.
That's my job.
Now, you served 10 years in prison, or 8 to 10 years.
I served 8 out of a 10-year sentence.
8 out of a 10-year sentence,
right,
for attempted burglary.
Right.
And an off-duty police officer was shot, actually, during that robbery.
Right.
So what? I mean, you served your time, so you could talk about it, right?
Yeah.
Is the statute of limitations up?
He served his time.
Yeah, yeah,
no,
okay.
Yeah.
So what happened?
So you shot the cop?
No.
I didn't. I was in, I was convicted of the burglary, you know, and in the commission of that crime, in a commission of any felony, when someone, it results in the death of someone else, they call that felony murder.
Right.
And that's what I was charged with, not intentional murder.
So your friend
who you were with is actually the person that, he's in jail for life.
Right, he got natural life. Mm-hmm.
So explain to us what happened on that day, December 10th, 2005.
You know, at that time in my life, I was, addicted to drugs. I was addicted to crack, heroin.
Crack?
Yeah, both.
Wow.
Both drugs. And, I'm proud to say I'm sober now, 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, with that being said, that night, you know, we came to, you know, we got a little desperate. We couldn't find any drugs. No one had anything. I knew of a place where...
So you weren't acting at that time, so you had no money?
No, we did have money on us. It wasn't
enough to buy some heroin.
No, it wasn't that. We couldn't find heroin. The guys that we usually go to ran out.
Got you.
It was too late. We had money on us. It's not like we were going to rob the house for, you know, a VCR or something
right.
It was a house that I knew would have prescription, you know, pills, because I knew the guy from, you know, way back when.
And prescription pills give you the same high as heroin in some cases, right?
Right, yeah. You know, opiates, narcotic pain medication.
Okay.
It's all the same, you know, on a urinalysis, it would all come up the same.
Gotcha.
And we went to the house. You know, I was really desperate to try to get in.
Mm-hmm.
Banged on the window, made all kinds of noise. No one answered. So eventually I broke the window.
With your hand?
With my foot.
Yikes.
Kicked it.
You must have worn as a high bat.
Yeah. You know, they actually used my boot as evidence, because they had microscopic glass shards in the front.
Wow.
Which were consistent with
the window.
The window. So, you know, there was no saying that I didn't break the glass.
Mm-hmm.
The off-duty police officer, Daniel Enchaltegui, lived next door.
Oh, okay.
Okay. He was off duty. I heard he had just finished his shift. Heard the noise. Came outside. I was walking away from the window. And that's when I heard a male voice. That's when I heard someone say, "Don't move." And, you know, like I said, I was, I was high.
Mm-hmm.
I just smoked crack, so I was very jittery and I was paranoid. And when I heard the voice, "Don't move," you know, what did I do? I moved. I turned around real fast. And upon doing so, I was shot.
Mm.
I was shot two direct hits and one that grazed me.
Mm. Where were you hit?
Where were you hit? Yeah, my abdomen.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just seen like blood squirting out of my stomach.
Right.
I didn't know who that was that shot me. And I was kind of, you know, I'm not going to lie, I was afraid. You know, mm-hmm. I was unarmed. I didn't have a gun that night.
He said that night. Other nights you might have had one, but that night.
No. Oh. Never carried a gun in my life.
I mean, I don't feel sympathy, though, because he was trying to break in somebody's house.
Right.
Yeah.
But your friend had a gun on him.
Right.
So what happened? So you got shot, you fall on the floor.
No, I didn't fall on the floor. My adrenaline kicked in, and I was trying to leave, trying to get, as far away from that situation as possible. And as I was walking away, I heard gunshots. And I didn't know at the time that my co-defendant was armed.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know where all that was coming from. But obviously a gunfight ensued between the two of them. The off-duty police officer was hit
mm-hmm.
with, he was hit in the heart with a .357 Magnum.
Mm-hmm. Woo! And I'm coming back from that one.
Yeah, and he was killed.
Killed, right.
Were you mad at your co-D? Like, why did you have to get into a gunfight with him?
Well, you know, not even that. I mean, even further back than that, you know, why did you even carry a gun and not tell me that you had it?
Yeah.
Because, you know, at the situation, you know, I mean, yeah, I was still somewhat pursuing an acting career. I was pursuing my addiction a little more, mm-hmm. but I was still pursuing, you know, an acting career.
But do you also feel like maybe he was defending you? Because if
you got
doing some, you're doing burglary and somebody has a gun, and you didn't say he announced himself as a police officer,
right.
He shoots you twice. I mean, he could have been defending you.
Well, yeah, that, you know, that is one way to look at it. Because he also got shot 9 times.
Mm.
So he got shot 9 times. I got shot 2 to 3 times.
He lived?
Yeah, he lived.
Oh, you should have did an album.
Yeah.
How many bullets
He's
did that cop have?
On?
So the cop, he changed clips.
I don't know. I didn't see what happened between them.
Mm-hmm.
I only heard it.
Right.
Because I was already walking down the street.
He must have had 2 guns, though, unless he reloaded. Because .357 has only got 6 shots, right?
No.
The .357 went the other way.
Oh, okay. Got you.
So then the gunfight ended between the two. I didn't see the aftermath of what happened. I was already on the corner of, Westchester Avenue in the Bronx.
Right.
And Arnold Place. And cops came on the scene. They weren't called to the scene. There was a bagel store down the street, and they were getting bagels.
And heard the gunshots.
Wow. So came over there, and by the time they got there, I was on the floor. I was on the corner, and I was like, you know, fighting for my life.
Right. I'm surprised they didn't let you die. Well, they probably didn't know you had anything
to do with
it.
They didn't know what happened.
Well, they didn't know. They didn't know that there was an off-duty police officer dead 3 houses
got
down.
You.
but the neighbors came outside and like calling them, like, you know, and then they call what they call buses, ambulances.
Right, they called the bus.
And they got three of them over there. And we went to the hospital, and inside the ambulance, I remember trying to say I didn't do anything, but for some reason my voice, you couldn't hear it.
You did. Like, you did something. They'd be looking at you like, oh, you did something. You're sitting there bleeding with gunshots.
Yeah, right.
So you did something.
Why? You know, we brought to the hospital, gave him the surgery. You know, they took my spleen out, part of my colon. I had a collapsed lung. And then I found out after coming out of all of that that an off-duty police officer was killed.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you know, wow, I was really...
So they pressed you immediately about being an eyewitness, I'm sure.
More like an accomplice, I would think, too.
Well, even more than an accomplice, because they've seen the, you know, the broken window.
Right.
So they, you know, there was a burglary in progress.
Right.
And, you know, somebody was killed as a result of that. So it's, you know, an accomplice wouldn't have been as bad as actually being charged with murder itself.
Right.
So, you know, we were, you know, charged with murder. You know, before you know it, you had Bronx homicide detectives came there, and, you know, we were interrogated at bedside. And, you know, the interrogation was, you know, while I was, you know, intubated with tubes down my throat, you know, in what, you know, the doctor called, the expert called a twilight sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because I was administered like five different medications at the same time. And this is the method in which they obtained, you know, statements of what happened. No words, just affirmative, just nodding.
Right.
So you told what you saw.
And no lawyer present?
Excuse me?
No lawyer? You didn't have a lawyer?
No, because they came in and did that, you know, before. My family was able to say that he has a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
So like you said, you know, did you tell him what you saw? Yeah, what I saw was that I got shot and I was unarmed and I didn't, you know, have a gun.
Gotcha.
And, but at the same time, I take, you know, full responsibility for how my actions and, you know, my drug addiction
mm-hmm.
put me there that night and how it cost, you know, a heroic New York City police officer's life.
Did you have to go on the stand and tell on your Cody?
No. They offered me a deal to do so
mm-hmm.
and I didn't. And they offered me a deal of a 3-9,
mm-hmm.
but there was nothing to say. So I took it to trial. They even offered me 15 years before, a week before jury selection, to not have to go to trial.
Were you charged with murder at the time?
Yeah, I was charged with murder.
And you took that to trial of a cop?
Yeah. I had a, you know, a very good lawyer. His name was Joe Tacopina.
Mm-hmm.
He's a, you know, top-notch attorney. And we were very confident based on the cap. Yeah. We were very confident based on the facts in the case that, you know, there was no murder case. A burglary case and an attempted burglary case was a lot stronger, but we were, you know, I took the stand in my own defense
mm-hmm.
at trial because, this took place in the Bronx.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was in the Bronx tail. So, you know, these jurors are all from the Bronx. My lawyer thought it would be best idea to do so because they're gonna, you know, the juries are gonna wanna, they're gonna wanna hear me.
So this was after Bronx Tale.
Yeah, this
was after Sopranos.
This was
after Sopranos.
Yes, this was.
Yikes.
Yeah, this was
2005.
Bronx Tale. This was like 13 years after Bronx Tale.
Yeah.
So now what's the what's next for you? Because you know there's a mother that lost her son. I'm sure there's some children that lost.
And I know
their dad.
Cops hate you. I would never drive.
Oh, listen,
the
NYPD, they were actually protesting because you are in a new movie. And they didn't feel like anybody should be casting you in a movie. The movie's in Brooklyn, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Brooklyn, and we also shot in Pennsylvania.
Right.
And, you know, an opportunity that I was very blessed to have been given and very thankful for. You know, my friend Willie DeMeo and Paul Borghese, they took a shot on me and, you know, gave me, you know, the opportunity, which I'm very thankful for. But, you know, I even heard you guys say it, in reference to the kid who got the heart transplant,
mm-hmm.
okay, a little while ago,
right.
That everyone deserves a second chance.
I agree with that.
And, you know, I don't see why I would be any different in that situation.
You can see why people would be upset, though.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's no question about that. But what I'm saying is I served my time. I didn't take no shortcuts. I didn't, you know, take the stand on anyone. I put myself there that night. Took a huge gamble, went to trial, was confident in the facts in the case.
Right.
In my, you know, involvement in the situation. Or lack thereof.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, while away, I, you know, made the most of the time. I got sober.
How did that? How'd you get off crack and heroin? Because yeah, no a lot
choice.
Of times people go yeah, to
no
jail.
In jail.
And get, yeah, no, they go to jail and get worse sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I got high. I was getting high in Rikers Island. Yeah. I overdosed in my cell, and
really?
Still continued to use after that. But then, you know, I got 80 days in the box,
mm-hmm.
and when I went there, did a lot of, you know, soul searching and
yeah,
thinking.
There's no way for you to get anything in.
You can get it in there. You get it anywhere. Yeah, yeah. Rikers Island. You know, it's readily available. You know.
Did you beat it with help or like you just? Like, I can't believe you got off cracking heroin cold turkey just on your own.
Well, you know, initially, you know, I had to. I had to because I didn't know the ins and outs of Rikers Island. I didn't know. But, you know, as I became accustomed to doing time and being in that situation, I, you know, was able to, you know, find drugs and, you know, continue to use. You know, especially in that situation, it was very painful. I was facing the rest of my life, you know, for one night. The overdose, still continued to use. That was about a year after I'd been in Rikers Island. Then when I went to the box, I just I got a visit from a couple of friends. And that visit changed my life.
What'd they say to you?
Well, they came in. I was already sitting there handcuffed to the whatever it was, the wall, the metal thing. And when they came in, you know, when I saw them, you know, I had a smile on my face. I was, like, happy to see them. And, you know, they didn't... They weren't too happy to see me.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, like, you know, what are you doing? You got all these people that are here for you and want to see you, you know, get through this. And you're doing this. You're still getting high. Like, what's wrong with you? And for some reason, that day, it just stuck. And it really affected me. And I just made the decision that day that I got to change my life. And that was November 18th, 2006.
Wow.
And I've never got high since then.
Damn.
And now, you know.
You said you first started using drugs while you were filming A Bronx Tale?
Yeah, well, the first time I ever smoked pot was during The Bronx Tale.
So how'd you graduate all the way to crack and heroin from pot?
It's, you know.
Was it Hollywood? Or?
I mean, a little bit of that, you know, that definitely had a, you know, an influence
mm-hmm.
on, you know, the path that I, you know, eventually took. I mean, you know, being in that business is lucrative. So, you know, you got money, you got free time,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, it's a recipe for disaster. And, you know, like any addiction, it progresses. It gets worse. It doesn't get better.
Now what about the family of the slain officer? And I agree, everybody deserves a second chance, but it's what you do with that second chance.
Right.
Because no matter what, even though you say you served your time, you know, that man's not coming back.
And right.
I could imagine if it was my dad or my son. And the guy saying, well, I served my time. And, you know, I'm sure the family, like, that doesn't mean ish.
That means nothing. My guy's dead.
My dad right. is dead or my son is dead, you know.
Right.
So
I think people would be more welcome to give you a second chance if their people could get the second chance. Like the person that you killed could get a second chance.
Well, he didn't have a gun.
Well, every action is a reaction. You
right,
know,
right? Because the person who killed him is in jail.
Yeah, but he led them to the house. He was like, I know a house we can
like
go
I
around.
I tell my son every time, like, you might not... If you don't want nothing bad to happen, don't do nothing stupid.
Or it up.
Because anything can happen. I could be right. in a car with a bunch of knuckleheads, and I do something, and they do something, I'm going to be charged. So what are you doing anything for the family? Or, like, you're saying the second chance?
Well,
like,
yeah, well, you know, that's what I'm, you know... I mean, I think people who are worthy of a second chance should mm-hmm. definitely get one.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that, you know, my actions... have, you know, spoken volumes of the person that I've become.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you're incarcerated, it's the DOC, the Department of Corrections, to correct mm-hmm. yourself. And I truly believe that I used the time for what it was intended for.
Mm-hmm.
I went there, like I said, I got sober, which is not easy.
Mm-hmm.
And also, after I fought my case and was ultimately acquitted of the murder and went upstate, convicted of an attempted burglary, I had I was sentenced to 10 years, so that would mean an additional 5.5
right.
from the, you know, from that Rikers Island point. So when I went upstate, I still, you know, I didn't have my GED,
mm-hmm.
so I knew that was one of the first things I wanted to do. And and it was satisfying, but I just felt that I should use the time as wisely as possible. Mm-hmm. So with whatever money I had left, I figured investing in my education, because they offer high school in New York State Correctional Facilities. Mm-hmm. But I enrolled in a mail correspondence out of my own pocket, accredited school. Mm-hmm. In Georgia, Norcross, Georgia, Ashworth College, and I studied business management. Mm-hmm. And I was able to earn an associate's degree. Mm-hmm. I earned 60 credits, and it made a huge difference in my life. And I came out, and haven't been in trouble one time since I've been home.
Well, have you done anything for the family, though?
No, not for the family, but I've been to high schools, I've been to colleges, addiction centers. Mm-hmm. I'm actually going someplace tomorrow.
Why haven't you reached out to the family? They'll shun you?
Because they absolutely. I just don't think it's in the appropriate time yet.
Because they publicly, have denounced your role and very upset with your role. They, of course, as they should be.
Of course, I would be the same way if the situation was reversed. If mm-hmm. that was my brother, absolutely. And I definitely have empathy and can put myself. Well, try to at least think, what they're thinking, and I understand exactly where they're coming from. But I can't control the way they think and feel. But what I can control is my own actions. Mm-hmm. And I've tried to make them as positive as possible.
And what would you say? There's nothing you could,
what can you
say? Yeah, what can you say? Other than sorry.
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I don't think they want to hear you say, I didn't pull the trigger. They don't want to hear mm-hmm. none of that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They just want to at least they can look and see, if they're watching TV, if I was someplace, helping kids, mm-hmm. To deter them from making mistakes that I made, mm-hmm. and use the situation in a positive way. I've really, worked my butt off since I got home to show people I'm a different person.
Mm-hmm. If you didn't go to jail, you might have ended up dead yourself, though.
Right,
because
right.
I remember reading about you getting pulled over. You had heroin in the car.
Right,
and,
yes.
And all of
that.
That was a few months
before that.
Mm-hmm.
I was on a downward spiral. And ultimately that night happened. And you're right. If I hadn't got, locked up that night and arrested, I probably would be dead right now.
I don't know too many people that came back from heroin. What's that high like?
Well, I never used it intravenously. I never shot it in my veins. I used to sniff it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I used to sniff it. The high was it's very deceiving and very, seductive, but there's a huge price to pay for it. Because like anything else, it's always the best in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And what that does is it imprints a memory in your brain, a memory of euphoria that you never forget. And every time you do it, you feel less and less of that.
You keep trying to recreate it.
And you chase it. Mm-hmm. And then, with heroin, which is an opiate, is a physically addicting drug. Mm-hmm. Because your body itself produces opiates. So when you're giving your body opiates from an outside source, your body says, we don't have to make them anymore.
Mm-hmm. So you were describing crack first. When you said the high that...
No.
He's talking about heroin.
No, talking about heroin.
Okay.
See, crack is not physically addicting. That's all in the mind. You could smoke crack for 10 days straight, mm-hmm. take a nap, and, it's like nothing ever happened.
Gotcha.
But heroin is not like that. You do it 10 days straight.
You're hooked.
You're going to have... Your body's going to want it.
And if you try to withdraw yourself, I know I've seen people, they're like shaking and sweating and throwing
absolutely.
Up and all
it's
of that.
It's a very horrible feeling and something that no one should ever have to go through. Because I myself seen, and have been in the grips of addiction. Mm-hmm. And that's why I choose to spend my time informing and using the experience to deter people from ever getting into that situation themselves.
Right.
And that, at the same time, that helps me. Mm-hmm. Stay on the right path.
Because when you were on Rikers Island, they didn't have you in general population.
No, they had me what was called CMC, mm-hmm. Central Monitored Case, high profile cases. It was any movement has to be, they have to call Albany. Like it's not as if you're not a high, if you're not CMC and you're in 7 cell and your sink broke, now you want to move to 8 cell. Because they got, the sinks, it works. You can't just do that mm-hmm. because of being a CMC. That has to be, they have to make a call to Albany mm-hmm. and say, well, listen, this CMC so-and-so want to move to another cell for this reason, and they have to approve it.
Mm-hmm. Probably takes days.
Yeah, you know, sometimes it doesn't, sometimes it does.
And then I know Plexico Burress was in there with you.
He wasn't in Rikers Island. He was in Rikers Island, but not when I was there. Mm-hmm. We were upstate together.
Okay.
We were upstate together. We were in Oneida in from 2009 to 2011. I remember he got there was like September, and then he got released in like June of 2011.
Why didn't have you in General Pop?
Well,
I would think. I mean, sadly, some of the inmates would look at you as a hero because you was in a situation where a cop got killed.
Well, I guess just because of the nature of the case and it was high profile. I mean, you had other guys with cases like mine.
Got you.
You know, other guys involved in the same type of stuff where I was. You know, but it's just high profile.
Were you ever scared in prison? Because you knew the cops had it out for you?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie and say, you know, that I wasn't. But yeah, at times.
Did they ever do anything to you?
No.
Like starve you out?
No.
Don't let you wash? No. Beat you up?
I think, you know, it's all about in the way you carry yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you just mind your business and just do your time. You're going to be all right.
And what about your Cody? Have you spoke to him while you were in or spoke to him outside?
Well, I haven't spoke to him since, you know, since. I mean, we, you know, like, you know, through people in the neighborhood. You know, it was, oh, you know, so-and-so said hello, you know, tell him hello. But when we were in Rikers Island together, we used to see each other when we used to go to court. We were in different buildings, but the ESCO emergency service unit, because we didn't go in the bus because it was a high profile. So mm-hmm. We'd go in the van, me, him, and maybe a few other, you know, high profile guys. And we used to see each other in the van and go to court. But then, you know, we had separate trials.
Does he think you ratted him up?
No, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. I mean, that's all, I mean, you can go online and see that, you know, none of that happened. I took it to trial.
Right.
You know, it was a trial of, you know, that consisted of over 30 days. Mm-hmm. A guy who tells on someone doesn't get 10 years for an attempted burglary.
Right. Now, what about how much did that trial cost you?
Cost me about $250,000.
Oh, you had a real lawyer?
Yeah.
I was thinking he was on heroin crack, he probably had no money. He said he didn't have no money.
No, he said he had drugs.
He just didn't find a place to buy the drugs.
We weren't, like I said, we weren't, you know, like two burglars going to rob a DVD.
You just couldn't find anybody. Your dealer was nowhere around.
He ran out. The other guy didn't, you know, when it rains, it pours. There was nothing around, so.
Now, since you've gotten out, though, people have reached out to you and tried to help you. And you have been casted in a couple of movies. And I even saw you did a music video with a pop star, and people were angry about it.
Well, the video never went through.
Right.
Because of all the commotion that, you know, my involvement was causing. They put the kibosh on it, and it never went through.
What video was that?
A girl, Natalie Ura. Oh, no. She's a Russian pop singer. Mm.
So, and then you got casted in this Alec Baldwin film. And but that's good to go, like filming. I know there's been some issues with people protesting, but you're solidified in that?
Right. No, that we already, I'm already shot my scenes.
Do anybody say anything to you? Like the actors, like Alex, did he ask you?
Oh, I didn't work with him.
Oh, gotcha.
He's in the film. Yeah. Mike Tyson is in the film. Michael Madsen, Annabella Sciorra, you know, Danny Glover. William DeMeo.
You talk to Mike? I'm sure he understands.
No, I didn't speak to Mike, but I have a picture of Mike when I was on the cover of the Post last week. I have a picture of Mike holding up the paper.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that was cool, you know. A guy like that, I mean, he can definitely understand where I'm coming from. He was in a, you know.
You think people ever forgive you?
I think, you know, when enough time goes on, and people see, you know, through my actions that, you know, this guy's really changed. I think, I'll be worthy of it. And I think people eventually, you mean everyone? No.
Yeah.
But I think that I'm on the path, you know, with the path that I'm on, I think that I will be able to convince, you know, people, because it's from the heart, that I have changed.
Will you ever forgive yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I'm proud of the person that I've become, and that I was able to turn such a negative into a positive. And, you know, like when I talk to these kids at high schools and colleges, and I see the look on their faces when I'm speaking to them, it's just like a, such a fulfilling feeling to be able to do that. And to, you know, even, I mean, you're not going to be able to change or, you know, every single one of them. But if you change five, that's, you know, that's huge.
And this is you doing this on your own. It's not a condition of your parole.
No, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. It's just this is what God wanted. You know, a lot of my friends.
I don't think God wanted the cop to get
killed. No, absolutely not. This is why God saw fit to it that I didn't get convicted of murder and I didn't get killed. I'm still alive for a reason. Like everything in life happens for a reason. Mm-hmm. And that reason wasn't for me to be released after 8 years and go back to doing the same stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
It was to come out and make a difference in my own life and in other people's lives. Now, and that's what I do.
I read that you're also playing a priest in a movie. Is that true?
Yes, right. Mm-hmm. That was my first role. Mm-hmm. It wasn't as big as a film as the one I just, you know, completed.
Right.
But, you know, that one, you know, has Eric Roberts, got a nice cast as well.
They didn't do no background check on that one.
No. So, but, you know, when they offered me that film, the kid was from Yonkers. His name is Frankie. Came to my house with a box of cookies and a script. Mm-hmm. Literally came to my house because, you know, we went to the same high school. He's much younger than me. Rang my doorbell and, you know, said, listen, I got the script. I wrote it. You know, we got some money and, you know, we want you to be in it. You know, he said, I really look up to you.
You bought the cookies for y'all to eat?
Yeah.
It's random.
That's a weird offering.
What kind of cookies were they?
Like a mix, like an assortment.
All why not beer? Because you know you was a recovering addict, so you didn't want to bring a drink.
Nah. You don't drink, right?
No.
You don't drink. You but you, beer.
I did read an article about you going to clubs and how a lot of the people in the clubs, the owners, they feel like they don't want the NYPD to mess with
twice,
them.
Twice. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't just, you know, go to, like, today to be here. Mm-hmm. I had to get a travel pass. I have it in my bag.
Oh, okay.
From my parole officer to, you know, travel. I'm restricted. My traveling, you know, I'm restricted into where I travel. Mm-hmm. I cannot travel into any of the five boroughs without a travel pass from my parole officer.
What do you say? You stay
Yonkers.
Wow. Are you not allowed to drink or anything? Or is that a condition of your?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's one of the stipulations. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I know it's my worst enemy. Because I know if I have, you know, one drink, it turns me into a different person. Mm-hmm. And it's going to bring me back to where I was. And, right. You know, maybe this time I'm not going to be as lucky.
What about your family? Were they very supportive of you while you were away? And the whole time that you were on drugs, did they know? Did they say, okay, you know, he's on heroin? And did they talk to you, sit you down? Or was it something that you were able to hide from them?
No. It got to the point where there was no hiding it. I was, you know, I mean, I was at rock bottom pretty much. I mean, I was as bad as you get. And, you know, my mom would cry. And, you know, my mom and dad were just like, you know, so depressed on what I had become. My brother wouldn't even talk to me. You know, I mean, I was a crackhead, you know. I mean, you know, there's no other way to put it.
Right.
I mean, and
did you clean up stuff around the house for them? Like, were you good with your hands, maintenance? You know, a lot of crackheads in the hood, they're good with their hands. They're good, cheap labor.
No, I didn't do any of that. I was usually out.
He had money, man. He's not a typical crackhead.
Listen, what do you
he wasn't sucking D or cleaning cars.
I ain't saying nothing about sucking D. Now, that's disrespectful.
He said, was a typical crackhead, this guy right here.
Now, listen, we had this discussion the other day. What do you think is worse, alcohol or crack?
You know what? They're equally as bad. Mm. They're equally as bad. Let me put it to you this way. Detoxing from crack, it's very uncomfortable. And you go through the shakes and you sweat and, you know, you'll come down really hard. But you won't die. If you're an alcoholic and you drink every day for a certain amount of time, you cannot just stop because you will die. Okay, you need Librium. People, you know, are very misconceived about, you know, alcohol. Alcohol is a drug also.
Right, it's definitely a drug.
It happens to be legal. But at the same time, it's just as destructive as any of those other drugs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And usually it's the catalyst. Because once you drink, your judgment becomes impaired. And all the good things that you put in place, out the window.
Right.
Because now you think differently, you know. So, you know, I got to say they're equally as bad.
Thank you for proving me and Envy right.
Well, no, but he said equally as bad. You said that crack isn't as bad.
Whatever.
That's not proving
you
right.
Listen, so You what I wanted to ask you just now. Oh, did you have any remorse when you were in jail for the cop?
Absolutely. I still got remorse. I mean,
because I feel like you was more sorry for yourself than it. Than
no,
the cop.
I mean this. Listen, I you know I accepted responsibility, and I still do for mm-hmm. my actions, my drug addiction, how they made a contribution in the death of that heroic police officer, Daniel Anchautegui. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's something that I got to live with for the rest of my life. There's not one day that goes by that I don't think of December 10th, 2005, at least one time. Right. Okay? Sometimes it's 20 times, but at least one time, and say, damn, you know, I wish I could go back and change that night.
All the time.
And, you know, and that guy would be alive still, you know?
Do you think that was too much time when you got that time? Do you think it was too much time for you? Since you said you didn't have anything to do with the shooting, and a typical robbery case probably would have got a year.
Well, the sentencing guidelines, since it was an attempted burglary in the first degree, mm-hmm. it was a sentencing guideline of 3.5 to 15 years. Mm-hmm. Judge gave me 10 on my first felony. You know, there was other cases in the same, you know, in Bronx County that my lawyer spoke about in front of the judge prior to being sentenced, guys with 2 and 3 felonies in the same county, with the same charge, were getting 7 and 8 years. And I got 10 on my first felony.
But then someone died as well.
Right.
And was killed. Yeah.
Right. You know, do I think it was excessive? I don't want to use the word excessive because I truly believe that it was, you know, I mean, the sentence imposed came out of the judge's mouth. But I truly believe that the sentence imposed was won by God. Mm-hmm. Because I think that that is the amount of time that he thought that I needed.
Right. And you have to feel blessed that it wasn't worse than that. It could have went way worse than that.
Absolutely. I could have been convicted of murder, too. Mm-hmm. And I would have got a 20 to life or a 25 to life.
Now, for our local listeners, Westchester, Yonkers, that seems like a pretty bad county as far as police and the court systems. Do you agree?
Westchester County?
Tougher than New York, I would say.
As far as being able to take a case like that to trial and being victorious?
Well, you rarely see that in that county, I think.
I think with that same case,
tougher and a lot stricter there.
With that case, my lawyers, you know, and the lawyers that I have spoken to all said that I was lucky that that kind of case happened in the Bronx because you're going to get the best jurors mm-hmm. in the Bronx. Had it happened in Westchester County,
you'd have got life.
It would have been a very good shot.
That's a very tough place.
I would have, you know, maybe in a situation like that, maybe I wouldn't have taken it to trial.
Right. Well, we appreciate.
Have you heard from Robert De Niro?
No, I haven't heard from.
Did Robert. You ever have a relationship with him at all?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we did. You know, that was his directorial debut.
Yeah, that was his first movie he ever directed.
And you know,
did he turn you on to drugs?
No. Oh. No, he did the exact opposite. He tried to, you know, he tried to tell me, and he even came to my house, and he went to the wrong house. He rang the next door neighbors.
Mm-hmm. That must be weird.
That's an awkward intervention. Imagine I'm trying to intervene. I go to the wrong guy's house.
Robert De Niro comes to your house.
No, but he's, you know, he's, I mean, what a great guy. I mean, you know, I mean, the guy taught me so much. Mm-hmm. And to give an unknown at 15 years old shot of a lifetime.
You do look like you could be a son.
You look like Robert De Niro a little bit.
You know,
it made sense.
And, you know, I mean, the decisions that I made in my life definitely had to, you know, let him down. Right. And I understand that he hasn't reached out. But at the same time, he never said anything negative. Mm-hmm. He kind of, like, you know, just said that it was unfortunate for everyone involved. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, is what you're supposed to say in that situation.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, I haven't reached out to him, but, you know, one day after, you know, I mean,
years. You feel like you've proven.
Yeah, after I truly believe. I mean, I think it's still too early now. Mm-hmm. I mean, not reach out to him for a job.
But just
reach out to him just to make things right. Mm-hmm. And just to look in his eyes and say, you know,
do the family first, though, before Robert.
Right.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. I mean, I would have did that already. Mm-hmm. Believe me. I want to sit, you know,
just
with his sister.
Not appropriate yet.
And say, you know, listen, you know. You know, I'm truly, you know, I truly apologize, and I am really sorry.
Well, you should say, because you know they're going to see this, so if you had something to say to them right now.
If I had something to say to them right now, you know, I mean, you know, I'm sorry, you know, for your loss, and I'm sorry for my involvement, you know, but please find it in your heart to forgive me, you know. I didn't, you know, I wasn't, I didn't, you know, I wasn't the one who killed, you know, your brother. And, you know, hopefully in time, and, you know, and if there was anything I can do for them, I would do it, you know. But I just, you know, with the situation, it's going to be really hard to get them to forgive you and to open up to you in a way which was, you know, it almost becomes amicable. I don't think that's ever a possibility. Mm. I really don't, mm-hmm. you know, which I understand. I'm not mad about it. You know, I understand because, yeah. in you know, in the situation was reversed, I probably, I don't know what I would do.
It might help them to heal, though. To forgive you, it might help them to heal as well.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you'll get blackballed for anything in the future? Like, I've seen Chaz Palminteri has spoken out and said, you better not try to reach out to him. And
right.
He would never reach out to you because he was in a Bronx Tale with you also.
Right.
Do you feel like there's certain roles or moving forward that you might get blackballed?
Yeah, absolutely. I think to a certain extent that would definitely happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are, you know, I mean, it's a business. And in that business, there are all different kinds of people. And there are some that will be more willing to give you the opportunity and maybe know someone who was in a situation where they were involved in, you know, drug addiction and, you know, can understand and empathize in what you went through and how it was the drugs that put you in that situation. But now that you've used the situation and made yourself a better person, you know, I attend Narcotics Anonymous meetings 3 to 5 times a week, try to help anyone in that situation, you know, and try to talk to them and, you know.
What else did you do while you were in prison? Did you write a, did you think about writing your memoirs or?
Like I said, the first 3 years in Rikers Island, I couldn't think about anything else but that case. I had a case file, the whole case file, which was like, you know, a stack of papers that I used to have, you know, laid out on my bed and try to strategize. And, you know, I was in the law library a lot and learning how to shepherdize cases and different case law pertaining to that case and the charges that I was facing, trying to, you know, educate myself as much as possible in the law to know what I was up against and to help my lawyer help me.
Right.
So that's all I could think about at that time. And then when I was, you know, acquitted of the murder and, you know, had an additional 5.5 to serve, I spent my time educating myself and learning business management. It's a major that encompasses a lot. I took, you know, 4 accounting courses, financial management, politics, psychology. I learned so much, and you know, truly say I'm a much better person for it. Okay. You know,
we appreciate you for joining us.
Yeah,
and wish you the best, man.
Yeah, I guess good luck on your request to redemption.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you guys for the opportunity.
When does the movie come out? Just so people know,
the movie's gonna come out, I think, early next year. And I also want to mention one other thing. I got something that is in the works right now, a film that we are currently trying to raise money. A film called Valhalla, which is the Westchester County Jail. It's a jail movie. It's a jail movie, but it's more about what I just spoke about. Like, the most important thing to somebody incarcerated is not, you know, is not beating someone up or, you know, the most important thing to someone who's locked up is their freedom. And how do they get that freedom? And that's by learning the law. And when I read the script, I said, wow, that's really the way it is. That's an accurate depiction. So, for that reason, I'm very passionate about the project. Because I want to kind of show people what jail is really like.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so we're really close to securing the financing. Right. That's something that I would be a producer on and also starring. We're looking to start by June, July on that. And, you know,
Valhalla,
yes. With that being said, thank you all for the opportunity. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Lilo Brancato Jr. is the Breakfast Club. Good morning.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC, We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.